Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Well, good Thursday afternoon to each and every one of you, wherever you might be out there in Stand in the Gap territory. And along with Sam Rohr, I'm Gary Dahl, and we are delighted to have you with us today as we focus on some of the pertinent things that are affecting us in America today. During the second segment of the program today, we will be having our Washington beat with Attorney David New. So we'll be looking forward to what he has to say to us. He's got some tidbits to talk to us about regarding some things that maybe we've never known about the Bill of Rights. And so we'll be talking with David on that. And looking forward to that. But our other David, David Kistler, is sort of on a vacation day with his daughter up in the Lake Chautauqua area of southwestern New York. And so he has a deserved day off, and we're thankful that he has the opportunity to do that. But Sam, you and I are here, and we are loaded for bear, brother.
We are, Gary, just like normal. And, you know, when you go bear hunting, one of the things is you wonder if you're ever going to see anything. But in this case, we have more before us than we know where to go. So you're going to have a tough time guiding this discussion today, Gary.
we have more game than we do ammunition. Talking about, you know, shooting and hunting and so forth, the poor lion, what's his name? Cecil? Her name, Cecil? Over mm-hmm. there, poor lion. What are your thoughts on that, Sam?
Well, I'm just glad I wasn't the lion.
Oh, yeah, you wouldn't be here today.
I can make a very clear statement like that, Gary. But, you know, but it is interesting to see how, you know, he was, you know, that supposedly was a friendly lion, and he was human sensitive and all of that type of thing. And I really don't know what to make of that whole thing. I haven't read sufficiently, but clearly they've tried to make this the fellow who went there and hired the tour guides and the hunting guides, which is the normal practice when you go for big game hunting in Africa. They tried to make him look like a bad guy for shooting, but he says, look, he had no idea about it. He hired these guys. They did what they're supposed to do. If you've got an issue, go after them. So, you know, I think in light of all of the other things are going on, I'm not as concerned about that lion in Africa as I am about the lions in Washington and the bears and others, as you put it, walking around and all of the things that they're doing that affects us here more directly. Does that seem like too much of a harsh response, Gary?
No, I'm with you. I think it's right, because I think one of the problems of society today is that we make too much out of insignificant things, and the things that are very significant, we just sort of, you know, allow them to take their course. But, you know, talking about lions and bears and corruption in politics, one of the men in the Philadelphia area where our flagship station, WFYL, is located, has been accused of misappropriating hundreds of thousands of dollars, and yet he claims, I've never been involved in any wrongdoing. Now, Sam, he's Congressman, help me to say it right, Chakafata?
No, well, let's Chakafata.
Chakafata?
Chakafata, yes.
Uh-huh. You know, is that his real name, by the way?
It is, in fact, it is. That's, at least it's listed this way. He's used it for a long time, so I assume it is, yes.
So, you know, I know we have a lot of listeners, probably a number of listeners, as a matter of fact, who they happen to be his constituents. And what is your history with Mr. Fatah? I mean, from what I've been able to gather over the last day or two, he has been under the eye of those who observe wrongdoing in government for quite some time. And, of course, you know, he's been indicted on the wide range racketeering charges and a number of other things. What do you know about him, and what are your comments on this situation that is being developed even as we speak?
Well, Gary, I mean, when I was in the Pennsylvania House, he had some tenure there, as well as he was in the Pennsylvania Senate before he went to Congress. And I am not going to say anything about him personally or even these claims because, frankly, Gary, I don't know. I do know this, that sometimes, you have to be careful about this, sometimes federal charges can be very true, or sometimes they can be used, unfortunately, that's part of the corruption thing we're going to talk on a little bit, but it also can be used to set up somebody. Now, in the case of Chakvetaw, he has been involved and have had accusations and things swirl around him for a long time. Therefore, it's not hard to believe that the charges are coming forth. It is an interesting thing, though, whenever I hear anyone say, I have never done, as that quote is, I have never had any wrongdoing. Mm. Well, Gary, we know biblically there is none that doeth, right. We've all done some wrong. I don't know what he means by that, but that's quite a statement by itself, which to me kind of raises a little bit of a question. But in any regard, the whole issue of corruption, unfortunately, comes surfaces here. It surfaced with New Jersey Corzine, John Corzine, and his background. It's rampant across the country. And frankly, Gary, the corruption charges surface even regarding some of the presidential candidates like Hillary Clinton herself. I mean, this is something that's worthy of talking about. And, why is it? Why is it so prevalent? And and does it really make that much of a difference in leadership? And, of course, I say it is happening, and it does make a difference. But, it's a good item to bring up here.
You know, we're sort of running out of time in this first segment, and, of course, we'll go to David New in the second segment. But I want to ask you a question, and that is, you hear about this corruption so much in government, and you've been in government, you're associated with government. A lot of these guys who really come down with these big indictments like this, Sam, have they gone in pure-minded and just get corrupted in there, or do many of them go in with a corrupt mind and it just gets worse?
I have to say that it's both. I mean, I have known individuals who believe that and know that being in government and being in an influential position does in fact present the opportunities for exploitation, and they go there with the intent of doing that. Sometimes they get caught and sometimes they don't. On the other hand, some can go in who are fairly naive in their thinking and not having established their own personal standards sufficiently, don't put up the safeguards around them, and can sometimes get caught up. But anyone who goes in with a firm and fixed moral standard that is opposed to bribery, knowing what it is, that's opposed to corruption, knowing what it is, opposed to stealing and theft from each end of individual, as well as from the taxpayer through tax, through bad taxation policy and so forth. If they have those standards in place, there is no reason why a person cannot be in government and remain pure and clean. So it doesn't have to happen, but I guarantee you, if the fences are not thrown up ahead of time, it just very likely may happen.
Well, let me make it personal. You were in government for nearly 20 years, out of a 5-day week. How many times could you have, as you look back upon it, could you have said, oh, boy, there's a situation that could have gotten me into trouble?
Oh, Gary, many, many, many times. I'm glad that I put up fences when I went in immediately and stopped the conversation before it even got any traction. I'm telling you, it can be done, but it is a big issue, and it is a temptation for everybody who's there. That's why we should partly pray for those in authority, Gary.
Amen, no doubt about it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to come back after a 4-minute break with Attorney David New, our Washington Beat reporter, and we'll be talking about some interesting things as it relates to the Bill of Rights. So don't you go away. We will be back with more right after this on Stand in the Gap Today.
This is Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network, and I'm thrilled to announce that BJU Press, the Christian homeschool curriculum leader, has come alongside APN as a national sponsor of Stand in the Gap Today. Together, we share a commitment to further a true biblical worldview and to follow Jesus' command to be salt and light to the culture. BJU Press provides academically sound educational materials designed to fully equip children for college and the workplace. As postmodern culture seeks to eliminate God from the classroom, BJU Press integrates biblical truth into curricula that's accurate, dependable, and exceeds all national academic standards. APN welcomes BJU Press as a national partner and sponsor of Stand in the Gap Today. If you're a parent and want to find out more, visit BJU Press online at bjupresshomeschool.com or by calling 800-845-5731. Again, we at APM welcomes BJU Press as a national partner as together we work to instill Christian values in the generations to follow.
Deer might be fun to look at, but they can rub the bark off your trees overnight, creating thousands of dollars in damage. Ordinary tree wraps or stormwater pipe can't stand up to deer when they're rutting or in heat. Hi, I'm Jim Saunders, the creator of Tree Armor, the world's first and only spring-loaded tree guard. Tree Armor stands up to any buck, protecting young trees up to 4 inches thick from deer rubbing as well as power tools. It's infused with a natural cayenne pepper scent that repels deer before they can do damage to your trees. It's brown and almost invisible from a short distance, and Tree Armor is the only tree guard made in America, using only EPA-approved vinyl, free of lead and heavy metals found in other imported products. Tree Armor is not available in stores, but you can buy it from the manufacturer at a huge discount. Go to our website, mytreearmor.com, and buy as many as you need from about $3 each. We even pay the postage. That's mytreearmor.com to protect your trees.
Hey, Grandma, I'm confused. We're reading an article the New York Times wrote in 1999 in my Common Core book about the fall of the Berlin Wall. Didn't you tell me Ronald Reagan was mostly responsible for the fall of the Soviet Union?
Well, yes, I did.
Well, right here in the article, it says Mikhail Gorbachev did that. When I told them I thought it was Ronald Reagan, my teacher said no, that he was a president then, but he was just a good salesman. It was Gorbachev who was the great reformer who transformed the world. Boy, I'm glad they talked about that, because I would have gotten it wrong on the test.
Oh, honey, that was just an article from an old biased newspaper. I was there, and you can trust me. Oh, what are they going to teach you next? These Common Core lessons are awful.
Learn more about the Federal Common Core and PA Core standards and call your representatives today and ask them to stop the national takeover of education. Go to nopacommoncore.com or call Richard at 484-678-2236. Pennsylvanians Against Common Core brought you this message.
Did you know that the wicked, those who reject God's authority and proclaim good to be evil and evil to be good, will be cast into hell? Did you know that nations who once knew God and His blessings but forget Him, including America, will be judged? Hello, I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network. King David in Psalm 9 says that God, the great judge, is known by the judgment He executes. One day soon, He'll judge the world in righteousness according to His standards and perfectly administer justice to all. He'll remind all godless rulers that they were accountable to Him and were to rule in the fear of God and administer His justice according to His law. All rulers and all people, including the arrogant and proud, will one day acknowledge that they are but men and not God. I'm Sam Rohr of the American Pastors Network, saying that God is love and He is patient. But as the righteous judge, He will be known by the judgment He executes.
Sign up as a partner at papastors.net.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Stand in the Gap Today, along with Sam Rohr. I'm Gary Dahl, and we are delighted to have you with us. We are also delighted to have with us our Washington Beat reporter, attorney David New, who, David New, I understand you've got some new things for us to consider about the Bill of Rights in the United States Constitution. So welcome aboard, my friend.
Well, it's so nice to be with you.
How in the world are you?
I'm doing much better, much better.
Mm-hmm. You know, there was a man by the name of Dr. Robert A. Cook. He was the president of the King's College for many, many years. He helped start, the Youth for Christ. He used to always come on the radio and say, "How in the world are you?" Did you know Dr. Robert A. Cook?
Not personally, but I've heard of him for sure.
Yeah, so I'm quoting him today. But anyway, glad to have you with us. And I'm thankful for the Bill of Rights. What are some of these things that you're going to share with us that we really don't know too much about?
Well, I thought I'd share some of the little-known facts about our Bill of Rights and Constitution. Let me ask you this question. There are 27 amendments to the Constitution.
Okay.
And I want to know if you guys know which amendment was in process of being ratified during the War of 1812, during the Civil War, during World War I, and during World War II. Do you know which one was in process?
Sam is a great student of the United States Constitution, so I'll bet he knows. Don't you, Sam?
Well, that's a real setup question. I do, but you know what? Lest I appear to be in error on my guess, I'm going to throw that back to you, David, and say, all right, which one? Because I believe that probably most would be like me, even at this point, unsure or never even knew possibly that there was anything going on with any of them. So lay it on us.
All right. Well, the amendment that was in process of being ratified in the United States during the War of 1812, during the Civil War, during World War I and World War II, Korea and Vietnam, was the very last amendment, the 27th Amendment. It took 202 years, 7 months, and 12 days for that amendment to be ratified. It was first proposed by the very first Congress on September 25th, 1789, and it was not ratified until May 7th, 1992. How about that for a little bit of trivia on the Constitution?
That's a long, long time. And, of course, the 27th Amendment says no law varying the compensation for the services of the senators and representatives shall take effect until an election of representatives shall have been intervened. Explain that to us.
All right. What that means is when the Bill of Rights were first proposed, there were actually 12 amendments that the Congress sent to the states. Not 10, but 12. The first two on that list of 12 failed ratification. The third to the 12th passed. That third became our first amendment.
All right.
And the 12th amendment became our 10th amendment.
All right.
Now, you hear this all the time from scholars and historians, even judges. They say, well, the rights in the First Amendment are the most important, because, and that's why they're first. Well, obviously that's not correct.
Our first freedom.
Freedom. Mm-hmm. You hear it all the time that they're the most important, and that's why they're listed first. Well, that is obviously not correct. How can it be correct when it was number 3 on a list of 12? You see the problem. The original First Amendment dealt with apportionment, how many members of the representatives would represent how many people in the United States in the congressional district. The original Second Amendment was just ratified in 1992.
Mm-hmm.
And it failed. That Second Amendment, by the way, failed by just one single vote.
Mm-hmm.
And it came very close to being ratified, but it failed by one vote. And so only the third to the 12th were ratified.
Mm-hmm.
And but now when they ratified the Second Amendment, which became the 27th Amendment on our list, they counted all those states from 1789 that passed it.
Mm-hmm.
For example, North Carolina ratified the original Second Amendment on December 22nd, 1789. Virginia did so on December 15, 1791. Maryland did so on December 19, 1789. Strangely, Ohio ratified the Second Amendment, the original one, on May 6, 1873.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those states were counted to make possible the 27th Amendment that was ratified in 1992. And of course, that's kind of screwy because people say, you know, how can they count something that was ratified over 200 years ago? legally, it is legal to do that because once it's ratified, it's just as if it had happened yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how old it is. It's just as if it happened yesterday. And what happened in 1992, the Senate and the House got into a dispute about congressional pay. And they worked out a compromise where senators got so-and-so and the House members can do so-and-so to supplement their incomes as members of Congress. And so to make that effective, they had to pass an amendment that did what the 27th Amendment did. And so they looked at this and they said, hey, let's go back to that original Second Amendment, use all those states to make up the 38 states you've got to get, the 3/4 of 50, to get it passed, to get it ratified. So they did. They counted all those states. Isn't that something?
So those who voted on that when it was originally brought up 200 years ago, even though they did not get to vote upon it in 1991, their votes still right. counted, is what you're telling
sure.
us.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is legal to do that. I don't like it like that. I don't think
yeah.
that, I don't think they should have. I think they should have submitted it or required all 50, a new vote from all 50. But legally, they can do that, and they did do that. And I think it's a disrespectful way because it's really screwy.
Well, it is because
to have an amendment take 202 years, 7 months, and 12 days to be ratified.
It is simply because of the fact that you can have something that was brought up from the past that really could make could change the whole principle and direction of what the Constitution's all about. And I suppose that there are those amendments back there somewhere.
Yeah. Well, now here's another interesting thing. Which amendment was – that was the longest amendment to be ratified, 202 years, 7 months, 12 days.
By the way, Sam, was that the one you were going to say?
Is that the one you
– Well, you know, the guess would have been the last amendment simply because if anything would have taken that long by process of elimination, it would be the last one. But gentlemen, I think an interesting application. People are saying, "Well, you know, this is nice tidbit and trivia," and it is. It's interesting to know.
It is.
But I'm thinking of this and saying, you know what? This is why it's so important to understand that the change of law our founders made it that it frankly wasn't. I mean, the whole process of our representative government was to make sure that there was not a quick and an immediate reactionary change to our laws. Now, they never envisioned that something would go this long. But on the other hand,
oh, no, of course not.
It wasn't to take place right away. And I say that for those who are listening, as you know, that sometimes when there is a law that needs to be changed or an amendment that needs to be added, it takes a lot of oomph and passion and continued emphasis over a long period of time. We can't give up if we do not win in the immediate. Whatever the issue is, that is the nature of public policy and law. It's also, for me, I'm looking and saying, this is why it's so critically important of who we put in office, because here it is. You've got those who were a long time ago affecting us up until very, very recently. This is the application I hear of why we talk about the presidential candidates and their understanding of this and what they know. This is how I bear down on this and say, boy, that should be a reminder that you can't have somebody who has no appreciation for the past, who has no appreciation for the process of what we are, and who want to get in there and make a change, for instance, immediately because they have this dictatorial attitude, perhaps like what we have in Washington right now. This is a good point you're bringing up there, Dave, and that's why we should walk away, I think, just one application anyways.
You know, it's interesting to note before we're coming up against a hard break here, but Dave and Sam, Thomas Jefferson once said, and I quote, "On every question of construction, let us carry ourselves back to the time when the Constitution was adopted, recollect the spirit manifested in the debates, and instead of trying what meaning may be squeezed out of the text or invented against it, conform to the probable one in which it was passed," end quote. And, you know, I agree with that statement of Thomas Jefferson. Unfortunately, what we find today is that people are not interested in the original intent. In fact, I got in a debate over radio with an individual about that a number of years ago, which, of course, is something that the original intent is what we must go back to. Well, we're going to have to take a break, ladies and gentlemen. We will be back with more with David New, Sam Rohr, and myself right after this break, so don't you go away. This is Stand in the Gap Today from the American Pastors Network.
Nurse, set up an IV. And you, her boyfriend, you were the driver?
Yes, doctor, but I didn't mean to hurt her. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Just buzzed? Oh, then your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie, I feel great.
She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No, not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Fox News Radio, I'm Paul Stevens. A not guilty plea this morning from Ray Tenzing, a white former University of Cincinnati police officer, charged now with murder in the shooting death of an unarmed black man, Samuel DuBose. DuBose's sister, Kimberly Thomas, wants to see all the video evidence.
You know why we can't get the whole tape? Because it's going to see them trying to come up with a story to tell, the lies that they want to tell. So they don't want to show us the rest of the video.
A judge ordering a $1 million bond, Tenzing could face life in prison if convicted. Air accident investigators examining a piece of an aircraft wing possibly connected to Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 lost last March over the Indian Ocean.
The wreckage would have drifted thousands of miles to wash up on Reunion Island. Oceanographers say that is possible and that an ongoing effort to map the ocean bed may be looking in roughly the right place.
Fox Radio's Alistair Wanglin. Fox News, we report, you decide.
History was made on today's date. Stay tuned for an American Minute with Bill Federer.
King Charles gave him a land grant in America in payment of a great debt owed to his father. He then invited all the persecuted peoples of Europe to join him in establishing a colony of religious toleration, as he himself had been imprisoned in the Tower of London for converting to the Quaker faith. Calling it a holy experiment, he admonished settlers to work together, naming the first city Philadelphia, meaning brotherly love. It was there nearly 100 years later that the Declaration and Constitution were written. He died this day, July 30th, 1718. His name, William Penn.
This has been an American Minute with Bill Federer. For a free transcript, call American Minute at 1-888-USA-WORD.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the American Pastors Network Stand in the Gap Today. We are delighted to have you with us. David Kistler is taking a day off, and that is great. He's being able to spend it with his family. And so along with Sam Rohr, we are delighted to have with us our Washington beat, David New. And, of course, David is very, very much up on the legalities of our nation. He's up on the Constitution of the United States of America. And it just seems like every day there are issues that we face that, should drive us back to the Constitution, should drive us back to the law. And Sam, you know, I just want to make a comment to you, and that is the idea that it just seems like today, when it comes down to it, we find that no matter what level we're talking about as it relates to the judiciary, you know, the local or the state or the federal, there just seems to be those who want to legislate from the bench or twist the Constitution from the bench. And when that happens, that gets us way out of form. And with whatever situation that comes up, we need to pray that those who are on the bench will direct us according to the law, not according to their own personal whims and ways and ideas. Correct on that?
No, I think that's exactly correct. I mean, you know, even in that last commercial for those on our network who heard that last American Minute was talking about William Penn, which he obviously hears in Pennsylvania. And see, he made that very, very clear as well. You can have the best form of government. You put the wrong people in it, you will destroy it. You can have an inferior form of government and put good people in it, and it will function appropriately. What we're talking about here is having a tremendous form of government, a constitutional republic, but we're increasingly having to deal with people who are unfit for public office, and either as the corruption charges are, we talked about at the beginning of this program, or those, as you say, who legislate from the bench, violate their oath, or those in the executive branch who try to do the work of the legislature, which is a violation of their oath, or congressional members who are supposed to be accountability, effectively, to keep the other two branches in check. They become conspiratorial and working with them, so they violate their oath. These are the things of tremendous concern, which, again, I'm going to bring it back to this whole thing here of why it's so critically important that when we talk about those who are fit for office, that we speak in terms of integrity, we speak in terms of responsibility, certainly in response to do they know that we're in a republic. You know, personally, Gary, I am very offended, and I have a red flag goes up every time anybody who's running for office or in office talk about our democracy.
Oh, yes. Should be, too.
You know, Gary, it's not a democracy, and if they are so off on those basic things, almost always, not necessarily every time, but almost always, you can track their actions and track what they do, and they say it changes how they perform because of how they perceive where we are. So, yes, this is very, very critically important, Gary.
Well, it is very critically important. And you know, we see this coming up on a regular basis. David, explain to us the difference between a democracy and the representative republic, because I think that there are many people out there who really don't understand that.
Well, the difference is the Pledge of Allegiance. The Pledge of Allegiance, we do not pledge to a democracy. Mm-hmm. And to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, mm-hmm. with liberty and justice for all. Mm-hmm. Okay, a republic, it means that the people rule. It means the rule of law, and it means that the people, a republic is where the people elect their leaders, and they in turn pass the laws and all this kind of stuff. A democracy is a popular vote. And the problems with democracy, according to the founders, was that it usually ends up being a mobocracy, where the mob basically takes over. So we are not a democracy in the classic sense of the word. We are a republic, a constitutional republic, and that's the way it's supposed to be. And a lot of these characters who legislate from the bench on the Supreme Court, like on the Supreme Court of the United States, I'm not going to name names. I suppose I could name Anthony Kennedy, but I'm not going to do that. But a lot of these characters, the reason why they do what they do, and especially these law professors who don't know what they're talking about, is because they do not understand what a constitution is. They think a constitution is a credit card to where they can do whatever they want. It is not. A constitution is supposed to be a very rigid, rigid document that is fixed. It's like it's stuck in cement, and you want it that way. You don't want it to be elastic. You want it to be inelastic. The reason being is whatever rights the government gives you, sweetheart, they can take them away. That's why you want your constitution to be inelastic, so that the government cannot take away your freedom of religion, your freedom of the press, and your freedom of speech, and so forth. But the way these characters are, the government gives you all kinds of new rights you never heard of, like Bobby and Chucky getting married. Mm. Okay, you never heard of this stuff before, but these quacks, these characters, these nutcases, these loons, as Bill O'Reilly would call them, These people, the reason they're giving all these new rights that are fabricated out of thin air. Well, when you do that, these same people can take away your rights, darling. So watch out. This country is headed for a dictatorship, going 100 miles an hour for a dictatorship. We have less than 100 people who die of terrorist attacks. We've got thousands of people who die because of guns and cars and drugs and all kinds of things. But those 100 people who die from terrorist attacks in the United States are the excuse for the FBI, the Congress, the president, to savage and rip up the Bill of Rights. And we are going towards a dictatorship. And you're going to see it in your lifetime. Not only are we going towards a dictatorship, but eventually these people in Congress and in the Washington are going to surrender the sovereignty of the United States to the United Nations.
Well, and of course, that's very unfortunate. And that's one of the reasons why I think that everybody needs to understand the Constitution of the United States, and particularly as we are talking about, as I brought up the idea of the judiciary, you know, how the judges are to act. And, you know, talking about the judiciary, you know, recently there has been a revelation of some of the things that really some of the things that are going on within Planned Parenthood. And Sam, the Superior Court just really came out with a ruling on those Planned Parenthood videos that makes me really wonder if the judge on the Superior Court who made the ruling was really following the Constitution. What do you think on that?
Well, Gary, I think here is a prime example. We've been down the road before where some of these federal district type courts have stepped in. This is how the whole issue relative to what came before the Supreme Court in the matter of marriage happened, where these different courts across the country stepped in and overturned constitutional amendments passed by the states or state statutory law, like here in Pennsylvania, that found its way all to the top. I think that's what's happening here again. An activist judge, I think Dave will probably have a comment on it, but I find that what's taking place here is that you've got a lot of people who are more committed, in this case, to the defense of Planned Parenthood, even in Hillary Clinton, her comments, she's defending these folks, as well as others coming alongside saying, uh-oh, these videos are having too much of a negative impact. Uh-oh, we are we're forcing a change in this primary public policy abortion that we've had for so long. We can't allow this to be overturned, and they're stepping in, which I think this Superior Court justice did, and put a stay in for the release of future videos. I don't believe they have the right. David, what do you think about that?
They don't have the right to. These people in Planned Parenthood, their roots go back to white supremacy thinking. Margaret Sanger was an avowed racist, didn't have any use for black people. And most people who get abortions in the United States, guess what race they are? Yeah, they're African Americans. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, it's a racist policy. It's a policy designed to eliminate black people. It's an ungodly policy. It is a wicked policy. And this country is headed for judgment. Yep. And in fact, judgment has already come in the form of homosexuality.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, we've talked about that before. My question is, you know, what can we as the American citizenry do to guarantee that when a man or a woman gets on the bench, that they do judge according to the Constitution? What can we do about that?
We've got to change the rules. That's what we've got to do. And that's what my article, How to Beat the Supreme Court. Google it, ladies and gentlemen, and I'll show you how to beat these guys. Because the rules as they are right now, we will lose every time. You cannot reach the Supreme Court the way it's set up right now. We've got to change the rules to return people, to return power back to the people of this country.
Well, you know, you say change the rules. We already have that outlined for us in the Constitution. What rules do we need to change?
We need to change Article 5.
Okay.
We need to rewrite the rules so that it's easier to reverse a Supreme Court decision. Right now, it's like pulling teeth from a shark.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to take a break, ladies and gentlemen, because we are up against a hard break. We will continue our discussion right after this, so don't go away. This is Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr and David New, along with Gary Dahl. We're delighted to have you with us. Don't go away.
As Christian financial advisors, we hold a biblical worldview and teach stewardship as a lifestyle. For over 30 years, we have taught families how to apply God's Word to our daily lives. Our three-day stewardship lifestyle seminars are held in Bible-teaching churches across America. We go far beyond basic budgeting and dig into the meat of Scripture. We believe that principle without application often lead to frustration. This is Roy Russell with the Life Financial Group in Douglasville. We are just west of Pottstown on Route 422. Visit our website or read our weekly blog at thelifegroup.org. There you'll find videos and PowerPoints for our ministry to the local church. In addition to investing and actively managing over $100 million, we prepare hundreds of tax returns for believers around the area. Come in for a second opinion and see how a biblical worldview can positively affect your investing and financial planning. Call us at 610-385-4500. That's 385-4500 or on the web at thelifegroup.org.
Securities offered through Genius Wealth Management, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Deer might be fun to look at, but they can rub the bark off your trees overnight, creating thousands of dollars in damage. Ordinary tree wraps or stormwater pipe can't stand up to deer when they're rutting or in heat. Hi, I'm Jim Saunders, the creator of Tree Armor, the world's first and only spring-loaded tree guard. Tree Armor stands up to any buck, protecting young trees up to 4 inches thick from deer rubbing as well as power tools. It's infused with a natural cayenne pepper scent that repels deer before they can do damage to your trees. It's brown and almost invisible from a short distance, and Tree Armor is the only tree guard made in America using only EPA-approved vinyl, free of lead and heavy metals found in other imported products. Tree Armor is not available in stores, but you can buy it from the manufacturer at a huge discount. Go to our website, mytreearmor.com, and buy as many as you need from about $3 each. We even pay the postage. That's mytreearmor.com to protect your trees.
Stand in the Gap Weekend with Sam Rohr and Gary Dull of the Pennsylvania Pastors Network features a message from one of the nearly 3,000 church leaders that are members of the Pennsylvania Pastors Network. The mission is to build a permanent network of pastors across the state that are dedicated to affirming the authority of Scripture and taking seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Every day, we're working to impact the nation's values by encouraging pastors to lead their churches in addressing today's toughest issues, including the deterioration of traditional marriage, pornography, sexual permissiveness, and abortion. You're invited to join us in the battle for truth.
Airing Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. and streaming Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. on our website, 1180wfyl.com.
Men, by their constitution, are naturally divided into two parties. One, those who fear and distrust the people and wish to draw all powers from them into the hands of the higher classes. And two, those who identify themselves with the people, have confidence in them, cherish and consider them as the most honest and safe, although not the most wise depository of public interests. In every country, these two parties exist, and in every one where they are free to think, speak, and write, they will declare themselves. Thomas Jefferson, 1824.
Chances are there'll never be an emergency ever again. But just in case, let's talk about a plan.
Okay.
Who is going to grab the go bag?
What's a go bag?
It is a bag we do not have that is filled with things we really, really need in an emergency.
Guess we won't have to worry about it then.
Well, this is great. I am so glad that we don't have a plan.
I know.
Winging It is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency. Who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
A government of laws and not of men. John Adams, 1774.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and we want to get right into this topic that we were discussing before the break, and that is that sometimes the Supreme Court, and without a doubt other courts, but particularly as we are talking about it now, the Supreme Court will render decisions that it becomes very, very, very difficult to reverse and to overturn. And David New, you said that if we are going to see that done, then we must change the rules and we must address some of the things that are brought out in Article 5 of the Constitution. Very, very briefly, why don't you explain what you mean about that?
Well, if you read, again, if you read my article, How to Beat the Supreme Court, Google it. I'll explain it to you in much greater detail in that article. But basically, it is so difficult to amend the Constitution right now. It basically means that a Supreme Court decision, once they declare it unconstitutional or something screwy like gay marriage, which is a contradiction in terms if there ever was one, but once they declare something to be constitutional right, it's next to impossible to reverse it. And the only way that's going to change is we've got to change the rules. We've got to make it easier to amend the Constitution. This two-thirds requirement from the Congress is too high. It should be 50%. Also, requiring states to only propose amendments through a convention is too hard. They should be able to do it by the 50 state legislatures with 51%. A simple majority of 26 states is enough to call for a constitutional amendment to be sent to all 50 states for ratification. And we've got to change the rules, otherwise we're going to keep losing. This is a losing strategy of staying within Article 5. By the way, a lot of people don't know this about Article 5. It was added at the very tail end of the Constitutional Convention. And the guy that did that at the within days of the Constitutional Convention ending was Alexander Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been his method, and only his method so far, that has been used. By Congress proposing amendments. That was Alexander Hamilton.
You know.
By the way, also, if I could very briefly, those of you who heard that commercial about Benjamin Franklin, if you know, when he laid out the city of Philadelphia, he was inspired by one particular book in the Bible. If you send an email to any one of these hosts and you name which of the 66 books of the Bible he used to inspire his layout of the city of Philadelphia, I'll send you a complimentary copy of my book, The Constitution for Beginners.
Oh.
The first one to win gets it.
Okay. All right. Sam, they're going to send it to you because you live in the Philadelphia area. You know that.
Well, that's fine. Please do. Please do.
Okay.
Yes.
Give them that address. Anyway, you know, I want to continue this discussion on the article on Article 5. Sam, in light of what David New said, how we need to take a look at Article 5 and maybe reverse or change some of the rules that are in there, do you think that that will ever happen today? The other question I have along with that line is there a danger in doing that? Because we do know that there are people out there who really do want to destroy, change, rewrite our Constitution. So your comments on that, sir. Will that ever happen, and is there a danger in doing it?
You know, Gary, as far as whether it will happen or not, the way Congress is, at least this present Congress and the Congresses of the last sessions or so many sessions, the way that they have failed to actually exercise their own current constitutional duty relative to, as we talked about earlier, holding the other branches accountable and that kind of thing, I do not perceive them picking up something so forward-looking. That's sad to say, but I think that they are so politically driven at the moment rather than duty-bound and so concerned about the next election and or how their positions or their comments are going to show up in the poll tomorrow, that they are not speaking in terms of the next generation. They're not speaking in terms of the last generation. That's what stands in the way, I think, of dealing substantively. And the other reason I say that, Gary, is because what we're talking about here is attempting to fix a problem that has been identified over time. We are dealing with the symptoms of problems. What Dave is suggesting is fixing a problem. But Congress and most of the current mentality of the political system is focused on that which can be fixed immediately, that which can be done tomorrow, and deal with the symptoms rather than fix the problems. So anyways, I'll go with that. But the other part is that I tend to be personally also quite reluctant about changing the fundamental structure of the way we are, because of the way we should be and are structurally, because there are many who are wanting to change it. I would be far more concerned about trying to protect the current structure against those like an aggressive executive branch in Washington or an executive judicial branch who try to exceed the current authority. So Dave has said, you know, Congress can come back in terms of the court and actually take away by legislative action. They can take away their right to rule on such things as marriage, which is not their issue. They can actually take and say that rather than a majority rule of the court, that it needs a 2/3, for instance, of the court. They can take and change those things. That is the function of Congress, but that's the kind of thing I think they should do. And that doesn't even get involved with tampering or changing the fundamental articles of the Constitution.
Well, just getting back to what the Constitution lays out, it would be a big thing, and that's what we all pray takes place. Now, we're almost out of time here, but I want to ask you men a question that I've never heard asked before. And I know we're not going to have the time to answer it, but I just want to throw it out there. At least I've never heard it asked before, and that is this. When we elect a person, or I should say when a person is put on the Supreme Court, we don't elect them to the Supreme Court. But when a judge is put on any bench, whether it's the Supreme Court or your local county courts, they are supposed to be blind to their opinions and to their own philosophies and so forth and so on. And yet they are registered as Democratic or Republican or whatever the case may be. What does a judge must go through? What must a judge go through to the point that when he sits or when she sits down on that bench, that they are going to be blind to their own philosophies? Dave, very, very briefly, what kind of thought process does that take for that individual to be able to judge in such a way?
Well, there are judicial codes and ethics for judges that they are required to follow, and they are not supposed to be openly partisan and political. That's why you don't see judges, endorsing candidates, for example, for president of the United States. But I want to say one thing about this Article 5 jazz. It's already been amended. The Constitution has been amended. There is now, under our system of government, a new way to amend the Constitution. And that is if you can get five of these people on the Supreme Court to agree to a new amendment. You can bypass Article 5 already. So I understand that conservative feeling, but it's already changed.
And with that having been said, and of course Sam alluded to that, we want to thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being with us today on Stand in the Gap. We want to thank you, David New, for being with us. And the Lord willing, Stand in the Gap will be back again tomorrow for the Friday edition. And I think Sam Rohr has the day off, and Dave Kistler will be back with us. I think I'll take Saturday off. God bless you. Stand in the gap for faith and freedom. Keep looking up, and remember, the best is yet to come.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.americanpastorsnetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap today.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.